You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Your hypertrophy training is only as good as your recovery.
Yeah.
So if you're not, if your appetite is an issue in getting nutrients in, then that 45 minutes to an hour or however long it takes you to train shouldn't take you that long. But if you can't get nutrients in to accommodate for that stress you put on your body, your hypertrophy training is no good.
Yeah.
Because you can't recover from the bouts of activity and you can't come back to fight another day.
One of the levers that I didn't pull that I needed to was inter-workout nutrition.
Right.
That was something I actually rap with Paul Carter about this. I'm like, do you really think it moves the needle? He's like, 100% it does. Especially if you're in your caloric restriction. If you're in a situation where you're, you know, training 45, 60 minutes, like having some carbs inter-workout ends up kind of helping a ton. And it actually helps with some pumps.
Did you ever do like the Cuban athletic program and drink like a Coca-Cola on the field?
No.
Just to get some sugar in you or anything like
that? No,
you ever play around with like Vitargo or
I played around a lot with Vitargo.
Yeah.
So back in the day, the bodybuilders I was training with were taking this thing called the kitchen sink. They were using insulin and they like would use, I think it was Lantus, which is the longer acting, but then they would use a short acting before. And then once they got done with the training, they would go do this, take this shake that had like 300 or 500 grams of carbohydrate with Vitargo.
Whoa.
They would add protein. They would just dump everything they could. They had these like fucking these protein shakes that like came in test tubes. They would just dump everything in. It was called the kitchen sink. And then they would consume this shake that was like 1,000 calories. And then these dudes would literally, I just watched them go and they would just blow the fuck up. They would like, dude, like I couldn't believe it. They looked like they were going to explode.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, what's this Vitargo stuff? And that was kind of how I got in the Swedish waxy maze. But I used Vitargo like in a small bolus in my pre and post workout. And then we'd use it as some intra workout. I never really noticed the intra workout stuff. But when I was funny, I was rapping with Paul Carter about this. He's like, yeah, the intra workout stuff really only becomes apparent when you're in caloric restriction.
Right.
And he goes, you know, like in being able to partition, you know, he's real big on like, you know, and like, cause I hit him up when, I was having some trouble sleeping and he's like, you know, moving the, you know, and Parsi had talked about moving carbs to before bed as a way to kind of control cortisol and like, you know, relax the nervous system. He's like, yeah, 100%. Like your biggest carb meal should be, you know, you should have carbs pre, during, post, and then your biggest carb meal should be at night. So I think it ended up working because it ended up kind of blunting the cortisol and actually helping me sleep a little bit. I just think once I got too deep in the caloric restriction, it was like 4 hours and I was like a shotgun out of bed.
Yeah, for me, especially during jiu-jitsu, because those training sessions can be at minimum 2 hours long. Let's say it's like 30 to 45 minutes of drilling and then it's a partial sparring and then the sparring. I would have like some honey dissolved in water or just some kind of sugar on hand. And that would help me get through the training session and not feel so bad during the eat the weakness. So I definitely think that intra-workout carbohydrate is a necessary part of anybody who's in caloric restriction. I mean, you don't have to suffer through it.
Yeah.
You can always tell because you're in the middle of training. You'll feel good right at the beginning. And in the middle, you just have this.
The bonk.
The bonk. And you just can't think anymore. And it has nothing to do with how heavy you're breathing. It has all to do with just not having an available energy.
And you guys do long training sessions.
Yeah.
I mean, going in at, you know, an hour, you know, like an hour training session, like let's say you go in at 6:30 in the morning, you're done by 7:30. When you guys do your comp stuff, I mean, it's pretty fast paced and it's in excess of 2 hours.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty good. But yeah, the hypertrophy stuff is fascinating in that, like, almost what you're talking about, being able to test to see if it's going the right direction, because if it's going the wrong direction, you got to make a fucking a U-turn.
Yeah.
Like, I remember years ago when we did the 22 Jack Street thing, I ended up putting on like 6-7 pounds of muscle, but I ended up spending the first 12 weeks trying to literally get as big and strong as I could. So we weighed in and then it was 22 weeks. I'm like, I only need like 10, 12 weeks to cut. Everybody else was kind of like aggressive for 22. I spent that. So I think I was able to put on some muscle. Then once I got into the cut, it was a lot easier. Whereas on this, man, like, I think where I fucked up is one, I just pulled too many levers at once. I started doing the aerobic work. We started training. I cut calories. I just did too much. And the problem was when it stalled, I didn't have anywhere else to go.
Yeah.
And, I, you know, I've always been pretty good on the retention muscle because we just, you know, if you lift heavy weights and eat enough protein, you should be able to retain your muscle. And I wasn't overly concerned with gaining muscle, just trying to like retain as much as possible. But I also wasn't using something like that. I was just kind of using the, you know, the eyeball test. But I think doing something that allows you to, you know, whether it be a bod pod or, you know, like the in body, just something to know if the levers that you're pulling are right.
What about pre-workout caffeine? Because that's like a go-to for everybody, right? It's like, you go to the gym, what pre-workout do you use?
I think the people that don't do that are psychopaths. but I'll hold back on that one. I personally do not like pre-workout drinks. I've had bad experiences where, you know, hey, try this pre-workout. And it usually ends like I take it. And then 5 minutes later, I'm like, it's exiting my body in the most uncomfortable way. So every bout of pre-workout I've ever taken, it results in some weird thing. The only one was many years ago, Dr. Tom Inkledon developed this pre-workout that he ended up working on it with Bill Romanowski. And Romo ended up kind of stealing it from him and putting out this thing called Pure Romo, which Tom was fine with because Tom just started selling the Pure Romo. So they sent me this stuff and it had kind of like almost like a orange kind of creamsicle taste. And I remember the first time I took it, they were like, Tom's like, oh, take a scoop. Fucking scoops for pussies, right?
Right.
So I took three. all of a sudden.
Typical John fashion.
Yeah. Like, dude, if you take two, I'll take three, right?
Yeah.
I felt like I could see sounds. Like the music was playing in the locker room and I was like, I feel like I'm seeing sounds.
Yeah.
I called Tom back and I was like, dude, this feels like Adderall, like a lick, like almost like a powdered Adderall.
Yeah.
This is, and he's like, yeah, it's real good, huh? And so I would take that like kind of maybe like an hour before practice because I needed to come up and I needed to come down a little bit, take the edge off.
Yeah.
But if I took it too soon before. This episode of Power Athlete Radio is brought to you by the Business of Strength. Imagine making this your strongest business year yet with more revenue, better systems, and a gym that practically runs itself. Sounds like a dream. But that's exactly what the Strongest Year Project delivers. It's a 12-month mastermind for gym owners, packed with one-on-one coaching, real-world systems, bi-weekly calls, and a roadmap to transfer your business from inside and out, just like they did at Varsity House Gym. Ready to stop guessing and start growing? Go to businessofstrength.com/attend and join the Strongest Year Project today. You want thick, sidewalk-splitting slabs of muscle? You want to walk into any room and turn heads like gravity just shifted? Then you need Jack Street. The same battle-tested methods I learned from over a decade in the NFL. Claim your 7-day free trial at powerathletehq.com/jackstreet and let the gains begin.
Well, that's exactly what happens, right? You get overstimulated and your heart is stimulated too because it is a muscle.
Sure.
And the action of caffeine is to release calcium into the bloodstream. So muscle contraction could happen at the neuromuscular junction. But whenever people ask me about pre-workout, I'm like, dude, just don't take too much because that high, it feels euphoric, but that high is not always going to be there. And you're just going to be chasing the dragon. And you're also going to be affecting sleep, which is our recovery mechanism, really.
The pre-workout before the gym, I'm a little bit more lenient on. Like, if you want to do it, you need it. Like, I drink coffee. I try to drink, like, you know, like two... You're going to laugh at this. So I do three double espressos in the morning and I do that twice a day.
So European of you.
Yeah, very well, I am. I'm very bougie in that way. The pre-workout I tend to avoid, but I drink coffee. And if I'm feeling a little tired, I'll go get a coffee. I go by Summer Moon and pick something up. One of the non-negotiables for me is no coffee and no pre-workout or anything before JITS.
Right.
And the reason being is I've been in class with dudes that have taken pre-workout and I've seen the look on their face when we start cooking them and they can't handle it because they can't relax. Like all of a sudden they're super spazzy and then all of a sudden you like smother choke or you start like fucking just holding them down or making it uncomfortable and you can see them starting to cook. I think Jesse on Fire takes a bunch of pre-workouts and I know he gets super fucking lit up and I just think it's fucking dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, the relaxation is a big part of not just jiu-jitsu, but also in general athletics, being able to fire, relax, fire, relax.
Task-specific tension.
Task-specific tension. So if you are unable to relax and just see things as for the what they are, then you're going to be less athletic because you're not going to make the right decision when the time comes.
Yeah.
But I also think that in some ways, like, if you need so much caffeine to get up and go into the gym, you got to remember why the hell you're there in the first place. I think that's probably the best motivator you can find is like, are you too fat? Do you remember how it feels to be out of shape? That should be the primary driver, not the euphoria that you feel when you take pre-workout.
Well, do you think that pre-workout has kind of gotten a interesting place in like the lifting culture?
For sure.
You know, like I was watching some Sam Sulik videos and like the Trend Twins and those guys are like doing a bunch of crazy shit. And I think like that's kind of the norm for these kids that like, you go to the gym, you take pre-workout, like it's become part of the culture. Whereas like kind of like lift, you know, wearing headphones, like last time I went to a commercial gym, I was kind of a little amazed because every single person was wearing headphones.
Everybody.
Like to the point where I was like, I thought they probably looked at me like I was a psycho because I wasn't wearing headphones and I don't like wearing headphones at the gym.
And I'm not like you. I like pre-workout. I'm very picky about the ones I choose because I understand like.
What's your weapon of choice? Knox Explode Butthole 9000. Explode my Butthole 9000.
No Explode was back when I was like 18 years old. It was really popular. Mm-hmm. But now I like Transparent Labs pretty good. What else? I don't really go for anything else. Anything that's like third party tested, I go for it. I think there was this one called Caged Muscle. That was a nice one.
Yeah.
Cause it was like USADA approved or something like that. But I just started going to just online to go look for other pre-workouts. And I just see the milligrams of caffeine go up and up and up. And now they're offering like 450 milligram.
Is caffeine the major driver in pre-workouts?
Absolutely.
So
I say it's probably caffeine. And then the other ingredient that gives you the pump is the citrulline malate, which definitely works. And then the beta alanine for the acid buffering. But for sure, it's the primary driver is going to be the stimulant.
Well, back in the day, it used to be ephedrine.
Right.
And I don't think they put that in anymore.
No, it was ephedrine. And then they moved on. And then Jack 3D, do you remember that one? That one had DMAA in it. So DMAA is some kind of meth, basically. Like it's an Adderall sort of substance that has
good stuff. It
feels great.
Yeah.
But then you would crash super hard. You take two scoops of Jack, and then you're just like, oh.
I told you during my NFL career when I broke my leg. So I broke my leg. They cast me 5 days. 3 weeks later, I played. And they gave me too many Darvocets. Like my leg was hurting. Like they gave me all these painkillers. They, you know, tore it all shot. And I was kind of sitting on the bench and, our psychiatrist walked over and I was kind of like blowing bubbles out of my mouth. He's like, you all right? And I'm like, man, I feel real tired. He's like, hold on. He came back and he gave me Adderall. And, then I realized the magic of like a painkiller and Adderall. You're like, I'm going to fucking kill somebody with his hands. Like this is incredible. This is like I turned my body into a rubber mallet.
So ready for murder.
Oh, dude. Yeah. It was like, I can see laser beams. And, that was a great day. And I realized at that point that, if you really want to play pro football, fucking that's a cocktail to get you out there.
Yeah. That brings me to the next point, which is, okay, you got your pre-workout in, you're fired up to go to the gym. What are you doing? You know, like what are the lifts that you're going to go for first? I mean, I was always a kind of guy that was like, be brilliant at the basics first.
Yeah. There's definitely research to support this now that there's a hierarchy of movements and something we've always followed in Power Athlete. You know, we're always going to do the big, heavy movers, the compound lifts first, you know, because they're the most neurologically demanding, the most physically demanding. But it's not 100%. So what we'll sometimes do, and I do this to kind of save people a little bit off pre-fatigue. What I do is I use like prep stuff or feeders where we'll do some like a little bit of hypertrophy work, a little bit of pump work, but we kind of do it just mainly because people are in good shape and they can handle that stuff. If you're in poor physical shape, you got to do the most demanding stuff too. But I do like playing it up a little bit. And I did see this, I think it was years ago, we had Jay Cutler on the podcast. And when I asked him about squatting and more importantly, compound, heavy compound movements, he was like, you know, I was really conscious of not hurting myself. So I never wanted to go into those movements really fresh.
Yeah.
So he would do like leg extensions, leg press, and he would hit all of his movements. And then he would put, you know, back squats at the end.
Yeah.
Because he was nervous that he was so strong and on so much gas and so much other thing that if he really got, if he was 100% underneath the weight, that fucking he potential to blow things up. So there's definitely an idea of, you know, the, like a hierarchy of movements. But if you look at the way this stuff kind of works, there's definitely a difference between bilateral versus unilateral movements and the hierarchy, the way that it goes. And there's benefits to both. But I think the way that we've planned it is that if you use the big heavy movers, like a compound movement, like let's use a squat, for example, and then you go, you know, to let's say a Bulgarian split squat and that type of movement, you've activated and got everything pointed in the right direction. And we also know that like 3 degrees of a different move, you know, of a movement changes the muscle exposure. So there definitely is a hierarchy of movements, but like at the end of the day, it doesn't have to be overly complex.
Right.
It doesn't have to be, you know, undulating periodization and all this. I mean, like there's a lot of these terms, but for the most part, I think that if you major in the basics and you get really good at the basics, and then add in enough kind of like unilateral accessory, I think you get really, really far.
Yeah.
The one thing that I did take away from that Jay Cutler podcast is he did 4 sets of 10 and did the same workout. He didn't really change his workouts. Like here was his plan. Everything was 4 sets of 10. And he kind of figured out like what the volume he could handle, but he was a big volume guy.
Yeah.
You know, whereas you look at like a Dorian Yates, for example, Yates was a big intensity guy. You know, kind of lower volume, high intensity. Jay was more of a 4 sets of 10, you know, 80% guy.
Yeah.
And, but you know, there's both guys that, you know, both won Mr. Olympias. So
going back to the compound lifts, it's interesting how people don't view leg extensions or calf raises as being activation exercises. They're not necessarily, you'll see different variations of those things during corrective exercise, like you do at a PT office,
mm-hmm.
right? But a leg extension is a quad activation exercise if you put it before the squat. You know, we're getting all those muscles activated and ready to do the majors, which is going to be the front squat or back squat or whatever variation you're going to hit.
So Arash has had knee injuries and knee issues like I have. Mm-hmm. I think if you play, you know, judo and the sports that we've done, that tends to be one of the things. And I've kind of noticed, especially in like the hierarchy of professional athletes, guys either end up with one or two things. And I don't know why, but like it's very rare to see somebody that has like a ton of back injuries and knee injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Guys are either knee guys or they're back guys. And like I was, you know, ended up with knee stuff and I've never had any back injuries. You know, Kyle Turley never had a knee, but it was back. But what's pretty interesting is, you know, when you have some knee injuries, they talk a lot about open chain versus closed chain movements. Open chain movement where the foot is not fixed, like a leg extension, bad for the knee. Closed chain movement, like where your foot is planted, the squat, good for the knee or leg press. So I never did any open chain movements, like, and it's very hard to train a hamstring, like a, you know, almost like a contraction, like a bicep with, you know, so you have to do like, hips up and then be able to pull the feet underneath where the feet are fixed, like we do with the, Sornex roller.
Yeah.
But I would do, you know, fair decent amount of like, you know, hamstring curls and seated hamstring curls, but I was very cognizant, but I never did leg extensions. And I never did them. I just never did them because right. They were, you know, if you ever talk to anybody, it's the single worst thing you could do.
For yeah. They said patellofemoral forces yep. and, you know, the angle of the leg extension. But since I've been doing them, my knee has never felt better.
Well, I found
butterfly guard.
I found the machine. Butterfly.
Yeah.
So I bought that leg extension and the reason I liked it was that I was able to change the back angle and lean back and get into a better position. Every leg extension that I ever sat in, one, I felt that like it was too upright this way. And also they weren't built for tall people. So I couldn't get my knee all the way back. And I felt like my knee, like the, you know, like the, like where the pivot was my knee was too far forward and I couldn't get back. So what I liked about the machine that I bought and the reason I bought it was, one, I could adjust the back angle this way and I could scoot my butt back as far as I wanted to kind of find the most stable position for my knee. And then instead of using just weight, I hooked up the band tension so that I had to drive through the bands and I could control kind of like the power band, like the strength curve.
Yeah.
And that machine specifically, I think, is really good. If you have knee injury, the way that we do it, I think has allowed me to do leg extensions and I don't have any ill effects from it.
Kind of the way like Platts would do knee extensions, right?
Yeah.
He would do it, lean back and kind of get into the hip flexor a little bit more.
Yeah. There was, I don't remember if it was an article or if it was some research that talked about like the best way to activate the rectus femoris in a leg extension looked like laying flat. Which is, you know, that's how, like with Tom Platts, where he would lean way, way back. But I like that that back angle that I can lean back and I can scoot my butt and get my knee really tight to that kind of that pivot.
Yeah.
Every one I felt pushed me forward, which created a really weird kind of torquing feeling in my knee that I did not like and actually felt like it made tendonitis worse.
Right.
Whereas the machine that we have up at Power Athlete, I think is very specific. That's one nice thing about owning your own gym, right? Like all of the equipment I have is equipment that I specifically have used. And I was like, oh, I like that one piece. And then you add it like, our matrix, you know, glute machine. Mm. I mean, the reverse hyper, I mean, everything.
Project Ass Mass.
Yeah. Well, like even the GHD from Rogue is a fucking tank. That thing is so nice and so big. I use that thing all the time.
Yeah. I can't say enough good things about that Rogue GHD.
Yeah.
Yeah. How much volume is enough?
That's pretty interesting. You know, I have, there's two schools of thought here. And what I've realized just in the feedback on the training programs, a lot of people that don't understand relative intensity and aren't used to pushing themselves, the way that they tend to get mass or tend to do hypertrophy is just through junk volume. And I had a guy the other day, you know, hit me up and he's like, I feel like my legs have shrunk. You know, I used to do a lot more volume. And the reason being is that if you're afraid to lift heavy weights, you just hit a lot of like low end, you know, kind of low level volume type work. And that's how a lot of people do it, through junk volume. But the way that we train and the way that I've always trained is there's some, you know, has to be some form of rep max. We have to be pushing, you know, closer towards failure or closer to that number, you know. And we also found that the heavier the weight, the larger margin of error. You know, if the driver for hypertrophy and working towards mechanical tension is 5 reps and you hit 4, you're pretty damn close and you're going to get most of the, if not all the benefit. You know, when you start talking about 30 reps and 29 reps is where you stop and you have to get to 30, then obviously the margin of error gets much smaller. But I think lifting heavy weights and then being smart with some of the volume stuff in terms of unilateral, you know, just getting under there and doing German volume training, 10 sets of 10 on the back squat, all that ever did was just blow me out and I could never recover from
it. Yeah, just an arbitrary number as opposed to just focusing on muscle tension, how much the muscle can take. Also, we need to consider like joint health. If you're doing a ton of junk volume, you're doing 40 reps of something as opposed to 30 reps where 20 of the, out of the 30 are very effective, then you don't have to do as many reps and you can save your knees or your shoulders or whatever it is that you're working. You can spare them from the damage you're putting them on.
You know, I don't defer to Mike O'Hearn very often on things.
He found a way, dude.
Dude, Mike O'Hearn.
A vampire.
Well, he's had a lot of work done, which is fine. I could care less on that. But he looks fucking great.
Yeah.
Right. And the one thing which is universal about Mike O'Hearn, he lifts heavy weights.
Yeah.
And he always has. And the guys that have said, oh, he's going to destroy his body, he lifts heavy, he's still training and those guys are broken.
Right.
So I think the one thing that, you know, you can kind of look at is, you know, there is longevity in moving well and there's longevity in moving well under heavy weight, but there's also longevity in being smart with the volume and the intensity. You know, that was one thing Dorian Yates talked about, you know, like he was going to get in, he was going to hit it as hard as he can, and then he was going to get the fuck out and rest.
Yeah.
So spending 3 hours in the gym doing a bunch of fucking junk volume is way more damaging to the body than getting in, training heavy, being smart with how you're doing it and getting the fuck out.
I was so glad you said that because that was one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was the better you move, the longer you train. And he just moves with picture perfect. Mike O'Hearn does.
Yeah.
He moves with picture perfect form at all times, even under heavy loads. And that in itself is a skill.
Well, he also doesn't miss a day.
Right.
Like, I don't think he's ever missed a workout.
Right.
Even when he had a kid, he didn't miss a workout. He also trains, I think, at like 4 a.m. He's got a group that he goes and trains at Gold's. What's his name? The punter from the Giants. We had him on the podcast. It'll come to me in a second. Steve Weatherford.
Okay.
Steve Weatherford was training with those guys, and he came in town. He's like, hey, man, you should come up to, you know, it's when I was in Orange County. He's like, hey, you should come up and meet us at Gold's at 4 a.m. Venice Gold's. And I'm like, dude, I live in Newport Beach. That means I'd have to leave at 2:30 in the morning or two, you know, like to be there at four, like to be at the Venice Gold's, I'd have to go stay at my mom's house, you know, like, and so, but like O'Hearn doesn't miss a workout. I don't think he misses a meal. You know, I mean, his attention to detail, I mean, I know he's got a lot of Botox in his face, but like, honestly, I'm not mad about any of that for him. The dude's like 60 and looks fucking great.
You can use 20 units in your forehead. I was going to tell you that at the end, John, but I'm glad you brought it up now.
Skincare experts and dermatologists have often touted the benefits of indoor humidity as essential for healthy, glowing skin. But did you know dry air can start to harm your skin in as little as 30 minutes? For years, many people have relied on humidifiers for better skin, sleep, and overall wellness. But traditional models? Bulky, mold-prone, and difficult to maintain. That's where Canopy Humidifier comes in. Recommended by leading dermatologists, Canopy is a completely reimagined humidifier designed to elevate any space, offering the ultimate in skincare and wellness benefits. Canopy's clean moisture combats dryness, dullness, and fine lines while strengthening the skin's barrier and boosting the effectiveness of topical skincare products. With its sleek design, Canopy is the cleanest and easiest humidifier on the market. With its unique technology, cleaning is as easy as popping it in the dishwasher. Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy humidifier purchase today with Canopy's filter subscription. Even better, use code PODCAST at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Your skin will thank you.
So I'm a little nervous on the Botox, and I'll tell you why. I heard that the Botox ends up destroying your empathy and your sympathy, and that affects your brain in a negative way. And I already lack sympathy and empathy. So I'm a little nervous that if you were to like numb that, I would have none, which would not be good.
Right. You just lose everybody's number.
No, I mean, I probably like, the hilarious part was, I'm sure I'm going to end up in marriage counseling here pretty soon. Coming off the 16 weeks of Eat the Weakness, my wife was like, you know, we probably need to go like have like some counseling. And it stemmed from the fact that this happened twice. We went to Hop Dottie's. We took the kids for like burgers.
Oh my God.
And
the Hop Dottie.
They fucked up my order. And I was so pissed. I said to the lady, I don't want anything. Take it back. I'm not eating. And I just didn't eat.
Oh, wow.
And Kate was like, and then we went somewhere else and they fucked up my order. And I told the lady, I was like, just take it. I don't want anything. Take it off the bill. I'm not going to fucking eat. And so Kate was like, you are a complete psycho. We went to eat and they fucked up your order and you sent the food back and like angrily looked at them and said, I'm not eating here. And you just fucking sat there in silence, hungry.
You can take the boy out of Newport Beach. You can't take the Newport Beach out of the boy.
And so Kate was like, and I apologize. I was like, I'm sorry. I was in a really dark, deep, like deep, dark place. And she's like, I think we need to go talk to somebody. I'm like, 100%.
Yeah.
If we need to go talk to somebody, I'm happy to tell them that I was being a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
But she was like, you know, we were out to dinner with people. It was after one of Cash's games. And she's like, you know, these people are all like crushing all this stuff. And you're like, I'll be fine. I'm not going to eat anything. And she's like, what a fucking crazy person.
Have I was
like,
a pretzel.
I felt like that. I felt a little crazy.
Yeah.
I think part of it too was the competition in the gaming and that like I like wanted to win and lose the weight and like all of a sudden it wasn't. And so I was like, well, fuck, if I start skipping meals, maybe this thing will fucking get going. And it was the exact opposite.
Hey, speaking of which, are you welching on this whole thing? Like, what is the competition? Like, what's going to happen?
I don't know.
Where's my fucking $300? Are you going to throw us a party? What's up?
I don't know. Like, I honestly, I didn't know what to do. And I was like, ah, shit. Like, I got to figure something out. And I don't know. Well, what do you want?
I don't know. I think we should probably just have like a cookout or something.
Okay.
I'll just do that. Yeah. But what about poor Ben?
What do you mean?
Ben's all the way in Indiana.
Ben never paid the money.
Okay, fuck him.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not giving Pollock back his money. If he's listening to this, he can go fuck himself. I'm just going to beat him for $300. He can come fight me for it, though, but he's got to fight me. So, Ben or Matt, if you're listening to this, you got to come fight me for that.
Yeah, $300. You got to pass his garden. He's not wrestling with you. He's no. Going to sit down.
But no, I'm happy to cook picanhas. I do probably owe you your money back.
No, I'm kidding. I'm totally joking.
I totally forgot. I was like, shit, I forgot.
No, let's just do dinner or something.
Okay.
Like
that, you know? All right.
During the Eat the Weakness, something that really stuck out for me and probably pushed the needle even further was the cardiovascular training.
Oh, yeah.
I was worried that we were doing so much hypertrophy training that the cardiovascular training would kill my gains. It would push me too far into a deficit. And it just wasn't really the case. I actually felt much fitter coming out of bouts of hypertrophy training when we did hit the cardio.
One of the weird things, and I don't know if it was the hypertrophy training or what, and even though I was super hungry and it was making me really negative, I probably never felt physically better than I did when I was at 260.
Right.
So, I mean, I put on, I think I'm like 6-7 pounds. I'm like 267.
Which you're still pretty consistent with your cardiovascular training.
Yeah, no, yeah. I do it every day.
Yeah.
Like before this, I'd like minimum of 30 minutes. And I basically what I do is I ride and I try to like stay pretty consistent around that 131 beats a minute is kind of my goal. If I do more interval stuff, like when we were doing those two minutes on, 2 minutes off, and I was getting into like the 160s, 170s, 180s, that's harder for me to recover from. But like, you know, 30 minutes somewhere around 131 beats will give me something like on the Morpheus, it's somewhere where 375, 400 calories. On the Echo, it's sub 300. That piece of just aerobic base, I mean, you guys have heard me say this on the podcast ad nauseum. A few things happen as we age, one of which is we lose that mitochondrial density. You know, you can improve mitochondrial density of some really cool ways, one of which is having a large aerobic base. Mm-hmm. You know, we have the guy from Moroso Forge writes for Sports Illustrated for me for the everyday athlete. And, you know, reading all his stuff, I mean, cold water exposure increases mitochondrial density.
Oh, Morosco.
Yeah. Morosco Forge.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, aerobic base, you know, there's all these different ways to improve mitochondrial density. I mean, there's a million peptides for it. I mean, MOTC, I mean, if you talk to Chris Duffin called me the other day when I was driving back from, Oregon. And like I had 30 hours and I probably could have talked to Duffin for 30 hours. He probably would have been down for it. But, you know, he's big into the peptide stuff. So we were just going into all these different peptides that he's using to improve mitochondrial function. But I subscribe. So in the 40s, there was a Dr. Warburg and he created something called the Warburg effect, which he felt that the driver for cancer was mitochondrial dysfunction. That what happens is when the mitochondria get weak and they get broken, they can no longer produce ATP and the cells don't have the ability to survive. So they use a archaic kind of ancient method of survival where they start fermenting glutamine and sugar to stay alive, right? So they don't have oxygen, they don't have ATP anymore. To stay alive, they just basically start fermenting glucose and sugar. And those cells that start that fermentation process of what we know as cancer cells. So Dr. Warburg's entire thing, the Warburg effect, was based upon mitochondrial dysfunction as a driver for cancer. So if you want to avoid cancer, you make sure your mitochondria are healthy. And then they basically, instead of doing that, which would have promoted lifestyle, fitness, health, wellness, and all the things, sunlight, and all the other things we talk about, they just fucking went in a different direction and said, it's a genetic thing. It's something that grows, and we're just going to kill it with chemo.
Yeah.
So that mitochondrial dysfunction theory, you know, and I think there's some holes in it, but I think for the most part, it's pretty accurate. Like if you want to be healthy, and the interesting piece and kind of why I got kind of really stuck down this road on visceral fat, it could be the fact that visceral fat in the body is the major driver for a lot of the systemic inflammation and a lot of this oxidative stress that could be a major player in that mitochondrial dysfunction. Mm-hmm.
See, that's a cool story, John, but will I turn into a cardio bunny if I add 2 to 3 cardio sessions a week?
No.
Because I'm not trying to lose gains, bro.
Well, I don't know wherever people thought about that cardio would somehow destroy gains.
I think they were missing the big picture.
Well, so here's what we know. it's easier. So one of the key factors for hypertrophy in muscle is always going to be insulin sensitivity. Mm-hmm. And the more muscle you can carry in relation to body fat, the more insulin sensitive you are and the more metabolically flexible you are. So if you can do some aerobic work and have a large aerobic base and improve mitochondrial function, and you can improve your insulin sensitivity and all these other things, your ability to put on muscle and utilize carbohydrates and fuels and fats and proteins is going to be dramatically better.
Yeah.
So the leaner you are, the easier it is to gain muscle because of the lack of systemic inflammation.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things, and it was funny, I was texting with Jen Wiederstrom during the challenge. And she was like, "How you feeling?" And everything. She's like, "Oh, send me some progress pics." So I saw her, when I shot her progress pics, the first thing she said is, "I see that there's like a lack of inflammation." She's like, "I've just never seen you this uninflamed." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Well, I feel awful." And she's like, "Well, you don't look inflamed." So, you know, and also it's painful to be beautiful. It hurts to be beautiful. So I appreciate that.
They call it fashion, not comfort.
Yeah. God, I'm such a Jen Wiederstrom fan. She rocks.
She's awesome.
So there definitely is benefit, and you've seen this too. There's definitely benefit in the leaner you are. One, better insulin sensitivity, you know, better, you know, partition and utilization of macronutrients. Hypertrophy is better because you have less systemic inflammation. You feel better when you wake up. Your sleep is better because of lack of sleep apnea and this. I mean, like, ideally, if you can live your life somewhere around 10-12% body fat, you're going to be dramatically healthier.
Right.
And, you know, now if, you know, that we've kind of got into this visceral fat thing, it could be the fact that, you know, let's say you go and you get an MRI in your abdomen and you see where your visceral fat levels are, mm-hmm. and you're able to kind of move that needle. And then, you know, something like Sabine does with the microbiome test to see whether or not, you know, your diversity score and bifidobacteria and some of these other things are this. And I think, you know, blood work is great because it's a snapshot. You can look at hormones and you kind of understand. But I think for a holistic health approach, probably getting your blood work done, you know, figuring out where your A1C is, how your body's using all this stuff, probably getting that MRI of the abdomen to understand, you know, not only fat around the heart for visceral fat, fat around the organs, but also fat in the muscle. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, something on the back end with the microbiome. I think that to me is probably about as good as we could do. But just, I think, just for a snapshot of health, I mean, and really to know where somebody is that visceral fat.
Yeah.
So.
I guess I have a couple more.
Yeah. Bang. Let's go.
Yeah. What about progressive overload?
Progressive overload is a non-negotiable. And if you're going to lift weights and not use progressive overload, I think you're leaving a lot of gains on the table, especially for hypertrophy and strength. Now, when people think about progressive overload, with Bedrock, for example, the beginner program we use progressive overload with weight. Every time you come in the gym, we're going to ask you to add weight to the bar. Now, for a more intermediate advanced athlete, that's not realistic. So we use progressive overload in a few different ways. We look at progressive overload not only like in weight, like we talked about with Bedrock, but we also look at it as reps and sets and volume and how you're able to do it. So let's say you bench, you know, 315 pounds and you come in and instead of adding weight to the bar, you add a rep. That's progressive overload. Mm-hmm. So in all the programs, I've always asked people, we'll start at one place. And as we get into this thing, I'll ask them like, hey, I want you to handle the same weight, but this time I want you to fight for an extra rep. Mm-hmm. And I'll use things like rest pause. Like, hey, you know, I want you to get as many reps as you can. I want you to put it up for 30 to 45 seconds. And I want you to try to get one, two or more. And if you hit a certain amount, then we're going to add weight to the bar and we're going to start this fight over again. Yeah. So I think, and, you know, there's a direct relationship between strength and hypertrophy. If you're not getting stronger, there's a good chance that you're not putting on muscle. So how do you know you get stronger? Progressive overload is the canary in the coal mine for that. Right. If you find yourself and everything's tanking, there's a good chance that you're not putting on muscle. But also the other one I think people are a little confused on is like, how much muscle can you really put on in a single training session?
Right.
Like a few grams. Like, I mean, a few, like it's such a small amount of muscle. If like over the course of a year, you put on 6 pounds of muscle for an advanced athlete, that's incredible. And you think about that would be half a pound a month. What does that break down into a week? What does that break down into a day? You're talking like a few grams at a point. So I think people think like all of a sudden I'm going to like do something. I'm going to go to bed. I'm going to put on a pound of muscle. A pound of muscle is extremely impactful. You know, and I think what also is people don't give themselves a long time.
A period of time, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've spent 35 plus years trying to put on as much muscle as I can. And what's kind of funny is once you do, it becomes kind of sticky. Mm-hmm. And that was another comment I talked to Paul Carter about. He's like, yeah, you know, if you've fought for muscle for your entire life and all of a sudden, you know, for 30 plus years, you've trained for it, it's not that easy to get rid of it. It becomes very sticky. The problem is when guys take a bunch of drugs or they start training and they're relatively new in their deal, all of a sudden they miss a few training sessions and they feel like they go away. I don't train for a week and all of a sudden come back and it feels like I didn't miss anything. But I also spend an entire lifetime building a large base for this stuff.
Right. I think more 19-year-olds going into their sophomore year in college need to hear that. Because they get disappointed, you know? They get disappointed if they don't gain 10 pounds of muscle in one year.
Well, but the problem is YouTube. Yeah. And you have guys like, you know, as successful as Chris Bumstead has been for bodybuilding, I mean, the guy looks phenomenal. I can't say a negative for him. But they did make a point that he used drugs very, very quickly, mm-hmm. you know. And the one thing that I've always kind of cautioned people is, you know, like lift weights for a long time. If the first, you know, if you start training and the first lever you pull is taking drugs, that's a huge problem.
Yeah.
Like give yourself a chance to create a base, give yourself a chance to actually like do it naturally for as long as you can. And one of the comments I heard with Chris was that he basically started training and used drugs really quick. I mean, the guy, it worked for him, but you know, I mean, Sam Sulik, I mean, these guys have, you know, I mean, they basically built their whole thing. I mean, they take a lot of gas. I mean, just look at it, like the acne he has. I mean, it's pretty gnarly to see it, but you know, what would those guys look better? Would they look different? I don't know. Would they be more successful? I doubt it. I mean, those guys have crushed it, but what they've made it very, very in fashion to take a ton of drugs. And it's kind of wild. Like if you look up anything that looks like performance enhancing on like Reddit and this, like the majority of people that are doing these crazy fucking cycles. And I see it like on Instagram, there's a guy that like kind of evaluates people's cycles. And like I was like kind of going through it and I'm like looking at these and he's like, this guy is like, you know, 17 years old and he's taking all this. And I'm thinking to myself, fuck, dude, 17 years old. Like that is so fucking young.
It's 19 so wild years old. Just to see it out in the open, too, because I remember even when I started lifting weights, I thought Jay Cutler was natural. I thought he took muscle tech.
I did, too.
I thought it was muscle tech that got him that big. And it wasn't until like maybe 2010 when we saw like some of the first bodybuilding deaths related to, you know, performance enhancing drugs. And we're like, oh, these guys take stuff. That's crazy. I didn't know.
That was what we were talking with Sean O'Mara about. He's like the most unhealthy people on the planet are bodybuilders.
Right.
And he said the drugs, because they're, you know, the majority of drugs are synthesized off of cholesterol. So because that the cholesterol gets really fucking weird, it gets high, it gets low, some does this and it's messing with all these things. And like, you know, these guys are, you know, eating in caloric surplus, they're, you know, taking drugs to basically do this. And he goes, a lot of the bodybuilders, the reason you see a lot of distended guts and a lot of like just crazy stuff from a lot of death is because of the visceral fat that they're packing around their organs, which is the most dangerous stuff you could do.
Yeah.
So he talked about, I think it was Sean O'Mara mentioned Chase Irons, who I don't know, he's got a big YouTube page. He said he evaluated him and he's like, dude, like guys of this age should not have this level of visceral fat. You know, so visceral fat being a major driver. But, you know, I mean, I'm kind of interested to get that scan done and then see kind of where I'm at. And then more importantly, see what levers he pulls.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's pretty interesting. As you get older, like the mortality of this thing is pretty interesting, right? It's true.
Yeah, it's true.
Right. Like, but then also this is another weird one. As you get older, you start to see this massive divide between the people that took care of themselves in their 20s, 30s, and 40s and the people that haven't. Like I run into people all the time and they'll tell me their age and I'm like, fuck, dude, I thought this guy was 10 years older than me.
You see those old school photos of people in their 40s, like maybe the old photos of the 50s and 60s and when drinking and smoking was in mode, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, they just drank and smoked their whole life, went to their office, worked and came back. And it's like picture of a guy at 45 in New York and he just looks like a 70-year-old dude.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I, dude, so... Wolford Brimley was, you know, in Cocoon. Those people were in their 50s.
That's crazy.
Like Wolford Brimley was in his 50s And I saw the picture of like Wilford Brimley in his 50s and Tom Cruise in his 50s, and he, this dude's in Cocoon and this guy's not. Like it's pretty fascinating. And also with like social media and Facebook, like seeing people that I went to school with or I grew up with, or, you know, people that I graduated with, and you see them now, and like a lot of them like look really good. Other people might as well be 400 years old.
Right.
So I think the idea or a great indicator of whether or not you're on the right track is how well you're aging. But I also think genetics have a place in that as well.
Yeah.
You know, I remember my grandparents who like looked, it's kind of funny. I joke with my mom about this. I was like, man, how old were, you know, my grandparents when, you know, and we kind of looked back, and like, they were in their like late 50s, early 60s. I thought they were like 100 years old.
Yeah.
They were wearing polyester. My grandmother had blue hair. They drove shitty fucking Chevy Citations. They were all these like, you know, they sat around and like retired at 50
yeah.
and then sat around and would have people come visit and have like fucking pound cake or something.
Yeah.
Like they didn't exercise. Like the only exercise like I think they did is like, you know, my grandfather went and played golf. Like walking around a golf course is not fucking exercise to me.
Pickleball.
So, pickleball's good.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing, and you'll see this, Arash, as you age and as you, you know, then the people around you, you'll see that the people that make health a priority age at a slower rate. The other thing you're going to see is people that are obese will age at a much faster rate.
Right.
The oxidative stress associated with it just increases aging. But also the other one too is big dogs don't live as long as little dogs. It's very rare to meet a fucking 90-year-old dude that's 6'5".
Noah's going to outlive us.
Yeah. Everybody that's fucking old is little.
Yeah.
Like you meet like these old little men. Like I'm like, dude, where's the 6'5", 90-year-old? Those guys don't exist.
I'm gonna hug you closely, John. Last one.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere quickly.
I'm not fucking leaving.
Yeah.
Last one, because it's lunchtime. How important is having a plan before you walk into the gym?
I believe a wise man said, if a boat doesn't know where he sails, no wind is favorable. And I feel the same for training, that if you don't have a plan, you don't really have a way to mark progress. So like if I put a plan of attack in place and I know what I'm trying to do, and there's limitations on our training programs. Like we put out a week at a time. And the reason we do that is because it causes anxiety for people to see the whole training program. Mm-hmm. But I like to know what I'm doing in week one. I want to know what I'm doing in week six. I want to see the progression. I want to know where I'm going. I like to like look at the macro so I can understand the micro. But I also know what I'm training for. That's a big question. And I remember for Power Athlete, our tagline for years, what are you training for? And it was a question I would ask people constantly when they would start talking to me about training, mm-hmm. especially when we go teach across the football seminars. I'd have guys come over and they would like, wait. And they'd come over and they'd give me these secret squirrel plans. I'm going to do this and this and this and this. And they were talking about all these things. And I'd just stop and be like, why?
Oh, yeah.
What are you training for? Like, what's the intended outcome? If we use the SED principle, specific adaptation to impose demands, that means we're reverse engineering for something. What are we solving for? What are you trying to do? And if you tell me what the intended outcome and what you're trying to solve for, I can create the equation to get you there, but I have to know. And if you don't know what you're training for, then we're just getting sweaty and we're just doing fitness. And if that's the case, let's just have fun. You know, like for the, you know, since Philippe ended up kind of getting in a little bit of hot water with IBJJF and had his suspension, you know, we just kind of went and just did some bodybuilding stuff. Right. Yeah. And I knew he was training. He wasn't competing. You know, VH was, didn't really have any major events on the horizon. I mean, obviously he had CGI, but he was a wild card pulled into that. Mm-hmm. And so we just really haven't had any ADCC, like something big to train for since that kind of ended in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then Philippe gets into his deal. And so we just really haven't had anything massive to train for. And I actually said to him, like, I can't wait for you to clear this thing up so we can actually put like a training plan together and one, start doing more athletic training. I like to start moving. I want to start doing more, just doing some classic kind of like base level bodybuilding, you know, fitness, GPP stuff. Like it's fine, but like, I want to do some more advanced training. I want to get back fucking into it.
Yeah.
And that really comes down to like, what the need is and like what you're trying to do and who you are and like how we want to use it. So at the end of the day, what are you training for?
Yeah. I think that's good, John. What do you think?
I think it's good. I'm happy to stop there, but I know we got more questions to ask. So maybe we can pick those up on another podcast. we can make a series out of this.
Please.
Awesome.
It's my joy and pleasure to be in front of John Wellborn.
Well, I also, it was kind of funny. I sent you guys today that it's the tricep that gives appearance of a big arm. It's not the bicep. It's the tricep. So we got to do a little more tricep. We got Stone Philippe yesterday. We need more tricep, more tricep, more tricep.
I can't wait to see you back on the mats, my man.
I know. I'm excited to come back. So thanks for having me. All right. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. See ya. This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market. We've built an online training business by partnering with Train Heroic to deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Hammer, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training. And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best training tech in the business, head to trainheroic.com/powerathletehq. And now back to the show. Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales we've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by klfi.com/powerathlete and toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's ko-fi.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See ya.